Hi, friends. Welcome into this week's episode of Forte Catholic. I'm so glad that you have joined us today. Catherine Whitaker and I have a great conversation about a country I didn't think we were going to talk about today. We talk about my epic failures and how I did the same stupid thing 2 weeks in a row and got the same result. And then finally, we talk about mentorship because apparently I need some of that in my life. I hope that you enjoy today's episode. If you do, please hit subscribe wherever you're watching or listening. Enjoy. And welcome to Forte Catholic. I am Taylor Schroll, and I'm bringing almost nothing to the table. And that's Catherine Whitaker, and she's bringing only slightly more to the table. Hello, Catherine. How are you?
You should have just had, like, can you do the intro music with little Enya? Then we can just set the tone for everyone.
we thought about this week's podcast being a sleep meditation. You know, that old Halo app that hasn't called either of us because we're not, people who just became Catholic yesterday that have a lot of
followers. Well, and I don't have a fun accent or anything, so why? Yeah.
You do, though. But I do think it'd be really funny for me, in particular, to do a sleep meditation since I...
There's no way you could do a sleep meditation.
Now, today, we're going to talk about the Lord Jesus.
No one would even know it was you, Taylor.
He asked his apostles to stay awake. Can you stay awake? Catherine, can you not stay awake with me for 1 hour to do this podcast?
Listen, I'm digging. I need you to know I'm digging very deep today. You should be watching YouTube so you can see what I just held up. But yeah, and it's only Monday. We still have a lot of more days this week. I know it's going to come out on a Wednesday. I can't even speak. But we have a lot more days to live this week.
There are more days. Why are there more days?
Why are there days? What are we doing here?
So we messaged last week. We were like, hey, can we record? Last week, typically we record the week before and then it comes out the next week. But you were like, I was like, hey, can you record, what was last week, which I said next week at the time because it was 2 weeks ago. And you're like, no, my life is too busy. And I'm like, honestly, fine. Like, I don't really care. At this point, we're at the end of track season. We're in the middle of selling our house. I have nothing to give. So I had no notes for what we're going to talk about. So pretty typically, I would say most of the shows that I do
Every show, or at least with me.
Well, I was going to say, you're the exception. Typically, you bring at least one entire segment to the table. And usually you're like, hey, I have these three things kind of floating. We pick one. I have the other two planned. With the other two, it's mostly I plan everything and they just kind of show up, which is what they like. Fine, fantastic, good for them. But this time I was like, Catherine, I have nothing to say. And you're like, I have plenty. So this is Catherine Whitaker's Forte Catholic, co-hosted by Taylor Schroll today. That's what we're doing.
It's only because we have lived. So if you were listening to the podcast last year, our May last year was bananas. Two sacraments, two birthdays, prom. I mean, all of it, within 3 weeks. That's our April this year. So that's why I have plenty to talk about, only because we've done lots of things. And this week is no exception. So we're coming in hot.
Here's what we're going to do today. I have one question. Before we get into what we're going to do today, I was 6 minutes late. I was exactly 6 minutes late to our podcast recording. And during that 6 minutes, right about 5 minutes in, I get a notification on my phone, Catherine Whitaker has mentioned you in her Instagram story. And I go, oh no, what has happened? Because I'm currently late. I just imagined it was you going, I can't believe him. We scheduled this and he's late. Does he not respect me? Does he not respect my time? And then I'm just sleeping. I was like, oh, that's okay. That's fine.
Oh, it's fine. No, I mean, you probably know this about me. I'm late to everything. I know that really annoys some people, but I'm like, listen, I own it. And so the fact that you were late, I was like, good, we're both late. Every time I think, oh my gosh, I need to hurry to get to the computer, I get a text and you're like, hey, I'm almost set up. I'm like, oh, thank God, because I was running late. So it's all
fine. I always forget how long it takes me to set up. I finished my task at 1. and was like, oh no, I have to set up the TV and the camera, and then my mic wasn't working, and then you were asleep. It was a great 5 minutes, and now we're here. So here's what we want to do. I have a question for you, because okay. I looked the last time we were on the show together, I dug myself into a hole, and I don't think I ended up getting myself out of that hole with you. So I have a follow-up question for you to try to get myself out of that hole, first of all.
Okay.
And then I have one thing on my mind to share. And then the rest of the show is going to be all you. How does that sound?
Oh, wonderful. Okay, great. Okay, Let's do it.
My follow-up question is, I dug myself a hole. I just don't think I realized how big of a hole I was digging. I knew that you were going to be missing Holy Week because your son was having surgery. Like, that's the behind the scenes. I knew that was coming. But I didn't know how emotional you were going to get about it, like, in a positive way. Like, you're caring about your kid. So I was like, oh, like, I definitely did that as a joke, but I don't think it landed as a joke. So I'm going to ask you now to dig myself out of the hole. How'd the surgery go? How's your boy doing?
The surgery went great. The surgeon told us better than best case scenario. So it was still complicated because that's how our kid works. But best case scenario. So we were very grateful. We watched a ridiculous amount of basketball while he was recovering. So it happened. And he built a lot of Legos. We had some friends that sent him some Legos. So our house was full of Legos, basketball, and chocolate chip cookies. So, I mean, there's not a lot to be sad about that. So he did great. Thanks for asking.
I'm glad things went well there.
Yeah.
Okay, back to
me. I'm also really glad that Holy Week is over. That was the rough, like, we're done. Praise the Lord that it's Easter. So, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, back to me. Now that I dug myself out of the hole, let's dig myself back into it. So last fall, I shared a little bit on the show that I played in a co-ed softball league with my wife. Do you remember? Did I ever talk to you about this at all?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, me being former athlete, like, I'm pretty good at slow pitch softball. It's not that difficult, right? Like, my wife was, you know, it's her first time playing organized baseball softball. So it was a fun learning experience. We had a great time. In the fall, I hit about 700, which means I got a hit 70% of the time, which is pretty good, right?
That's pretty good.
Pretty decent.
Most RBIs are like, what, 3.9, like 0.398 or something? Isn't that a good RBI?
Average. An RBI is a different thing, but thank you for trying. An RBI is a run batted in.
I'm not 100%. Okay, I got you. Okay.
Batting average.
70% of the time. Good job.
Yeah. In ERAs for pitchers, batting average is the... So, yeah. So, I came into this season... So essentially last season, I hadn't played softball in forever. I think I went 3-for-4 in the first game, and then my confidence level just rode me through the rest of the season. I ended up hitting right around that same average, right? This season we come in, and I got hurt at the end of last season. So that my season ended last season with me pulling my hamstring really bad. It's the old one that I hurt when I was running track, back in my track days. So re-injured it, and like it ended up lasting. Like, I still feel it. We're currently in the spring, and I still feel it when I'm running. So, like, I still don't have my full explosion. I'm still not sprinting. I'm still getting a pinch runner every time I do get on base. So it's definitely still there, but, like, normal life, I'm fine. But, like, I played basketball for the first time last week, and it was I couldn't explode. And the couple of times that I did, I was like, it's going to happen again. So I essentially was like, I just stood there like a wall for most of this. Like, I'm tall, you know, I could stand there and do this. Blocked a couple shots, but mostly out of shape and had no explosion. So much more useless than I usually am on a basketball court. Well, like you mentioned, your April's been crazy. Like, this spring is always crazy for us because of school and work. And, you know, then we decided to add selling our house on top of the middle of track season. It's just a stressful, busy time. So I signed up for this softball league. Was like, it'll be fine. And then I've missed almost every single game because Thursday evenings.
When were you going to squeeze that in,
Taylor? Exactly. Thursday evenings, like, on the calendar, we didn't have a bunch of track meets. And then we just added a bunch of track meets or moved them from Friday to Thursday because the weather, like, it just so happened that all of our Thursday nights were taken with track. So I come back like the conquering hero. Like, hey, y'all have been losing. Don't worry. I'm back.
Okay. I've arrived.
I'm here. I'm a big guy. I'm gonna play first base. I don't get any errors. I catch all. Like, I'm back, guys. It's okay. We're gonna win now, and we have one game that first night that I'm back, and I lived. It's like, now I still live for the juice of these moments. But like, when I was in high school, I wanted to be the last person, the person taking the last shot in basketball. I wanted to be the last batter up. I lived for those moments where a lot of people, especially like when we were teenagers, kind of shrink from those moments. And like, I don't want to take the last shot. I don't want to be the guy. And I'm like, no, give it to me. Cause I'm either going to make it and be the hero, or I can handle being the guy that's the last out or that misses the game winner and all these, like, I can handle it. I want to be Michael Jordan. I want to be LeBron James. Right. Well, came back, got a hit earlier in the game. My second at bat, two outs, last inning. We're down by two, runner on third and first. I'm like, everyone's so excited that it just so happened for me to be the one to come up, because it's game time. I'm about to get a hit. I'm at least going to score one. If I hit it far enough, we tie the game and I'm on first or second, right? Great timing. First pitch, beautiful pitch. Pop it up right to the shortstop. Game over. I was the last out. Mm. Not good.
I bet that felt good. Yeah.
It felt real terrible. And I haven't felt it in a long time, because I still, you know, like, we've talked about how I'm clearly not who I used to be physically when it comes to athletics, but also even mentally, there was like, I haven't been the guy that's been willing to either hit the walk-off or be the last out in a long time. It is how our season ended last season. I was the last out last season, or second to last out. It was funny, in my mind, I was the last out because I was so mad about it. And then somebody reminded me this week. Actually, it was me. I'm like, oh, good. Thank you. Thank I just thought it was me. Yeah, exactly.
I feel like this is a spiritual metaphor somewhere in here.
I think so too. I'm gonna that's kind of what I need your help with this, because I'm not done telling my story yet, Catherine. I'm gonna need some spiritual
I'm
advice.
I'm just letting you know that you're building it really well. So keep going.
Thank you. So the next week comes up, and so that night I go home, and like, I'm in a bad mood for like 3 hours. Because I was the last out. I know exactly what I did wrong. I did the thing where I used to always do when I was growing up. I took my eye off the ball because I was so, I just like, I know I'm going to crank this ball to the fence because it's a beautiful pitch. I took my eye off of it. I was looking 3 feet in front of me instead of where the ball hit the bat. And so I popped it up. So I'm thinking about that the whole drive home. I'm just so frustrated. But I'm like, it's okay. Next week, we have a doubleheader. I'll have plenty of chances to bat. I'll have plenty of chances to be out in the field. I'll be able to contribute to wins. Sure enough, the first game of the doubleheader the following week, which now is just last week, just a few days ago, I have like four RBIs, runs batted in, those things that you mentioned
you.
Earlier. I think I went 2 for 3 in the first game, or 1 for 2 in the first game. And then I went 1 for 2 in the second game, but I had 2 RBIs. First game, we won by like 15. Like I was a big part of the reason that we won the game. Great, I'm back. Okay, I was one week late, and then we had the second game of the doubleheader, and I'm also playing well throughout the whole game. And then, two outs, we're down by one.
No. Deja vu.
There's a guy on second. I'm going to give you one guess as to where I hit it.
Shortstop.
The same exact place that I hit it the week before. I was the last out a week apart from each other in two different games, and it was maddening. I let everybody down, and that's kind of that. I think that's a metaphor for my life recently. Letting everybody down.
I think. Well, sometimes my husband will say, "Only practice what you're good at." If you love softball, but you haven't been able to play as much, you got to practice in order to be able to be ready when, you know, the big hit comes.
You're right.
And I mean, I forget who I was talking to the other day, Taylor. They knew you in high school, and they're like, you know what an amazing athlete Taylor was in high school? And I was like, that explains why he loves sports so much.
Isn't it sad?
No, it's not sad. I think it.
People
think
very differently about than people from when I was 18. They're like, "Hey, he was special," and now people are he's fat and bald.
Let me finish. I think that you have high expectations of yourself because you know what you are capable of, but now you're also a dad, a business owner, a volunteer track coach, like doing all these other things while also wanting to do the thing that you love. And so you have mega high expectations based on your track record, no pun intended.
Hey.
And so that was good. I think that sometimes we don't give ourselves enough grace to say, but I'm also doing great things over here. And maybe the way that you play sports might be changing. It might be different. Maybe you need to spend more time on the things that like bring you peace and alleviate stress, but just because you hit it to the shortstop 2 weeks in a row doesn't mean that you're a terrible athlete, Taylor. Now, if you had me on the team, you would feel very good about yourself, okay? So I think you're doing fine.
I think that's part of it. Like, part of it is that, like, the rest of the team, like, knows, like, I'm not who I used to be, but I am still the person that hit 700 last fall. Like, I'm not that far removed from being very good at slow pitch softball. It's not that difficult for me, right? I've made it really
difficult.
I like
the emphasis on the slow pitch. Yeah.
Very, very slow. And actually is a requirement that it has to be a certain amount of slowness. But it was interesting for me seeing how I reacted to those two, because I reacted very differently to those two. I think the second week, so this last week where I was the last out for the second week in a row, I think if you're listening to the story, you would probably assume that I'd be more mad than I was the first time, but I was actually more upset the first time. One, because it had been a while since I had been in that scenario. Two, at that point, I thought that that was my last game of the season because of scheduling. I thought I was going to miss the playoffs because we're going to be at our regional track meet. And then for whatever reason, I didn't think I was going to be able to make it this past week, but obviously I did. So I thought that was the end of the season for me, where I was like, so there was no chance to make up for it, right? I can be the last out this week, fine, but I'm going to get another chance the next week, which I did. And I actually, you know, I actually ended up hitting over 500 last week. I just happened to be the last out. So I think that was part of it too, is I actually had a really, really good day. It just so happened that one of the few times that I got out was the last out, right? So yeah. Like there was more perspective because there was just more reps that day. But then also this time, I know that I'm coming back in 2 weeks for the playoffs. I didn't think I was going to be there for the team in the playoffs, which, like, even though, yes, I was the last out 2 weeks in a row. So you would think, oh, that sucks. But like the rest of the team still expects me to be one of the best hitters on the team. They still expect me to be the very large target at first base. And now I'm going to get to do that in the playoffs. So, like, you know, like you were talking about, like, the spiritual connections. It's like the first time there was very little hope because there was nothing that I could do to change the outcome. Like, both times I couldn't change the outcome of what happened, but I could still move forward and like correct what I did wrong. The first week, what I did wrong was I took my eye off the ball. What I did wrong the second time is that I wasn't patient enough. I didn't wait on the ball. So I shifted all of my weight to my front foot, which means that I hit it lower than I usually do, because if I wait on my back leg, I'm going to crank it out into the outfield, right? So I know exactly what I did wrong both times. The first time I didn't think I would have a chance to make up for it until next fall when our next season is. Now I know I can fix it next week in the playoffs when it actually matters. So like I have hope in it. I had recently dealt with this similar kind of thing. So I was able to bounce back really quickly. I was laughing on the way home. It's like, it is what it is, right? It happens. You know, I wasn't, there's also some perspective of like, you know, I scored my runs and a lot of other people made a lot of mistakes that cost us a bunch of runs too. So like, I don't know. It was just really weird that it was literally the same exact pitch, the same exact hit, the same exact play, the same exact ending. But I responded to both very differently because of some hope for change.
Well, I mean, as I think about ways in which we mess up in our lives outside of sports, maybe with our kids and our relationships, and then we march ourselves to confession and like we get another chance. And I think this ability to be open to change and how we respond, because the pitches are going to keep coming and you're going to keep either making the connection with the ball or you're going to miss it. But those challenges are not going to go away. And just like the challenges in our lives don't go away, but I think how we respond changes based on our faith, but also on our life experience. And also I think on our perspective, because I think when really, really hard things happen, you're like, I mean, I'm allowed to be frustrated, but I think the amount of time that you allow yourself to be frustrated gets shortened. And I was talking to someone the other day for another podcast that I'm on, and we were just chatting about this ability. She was saying like sometimes she encourages her patients to set a timer, like 5 minutes, like allow yourself to feel all the feelings. And then when the timer goes off after 5 minutes, it's time to move on. And I thought that was a really helpful piece of advice. And as I was thinking, I was like, I think that could be helpful in a lot of places in my life. Like, allow myself to be frustrated either how I responded to something or how I reacted. And then I need to end the timer and get up and move on. And
I want to do that for other people. I'm going to set a timer on my phone and be like, Catherine, I've got you have 5 minutes to be mad at me and then it's done. Okay. You can do whatever you want. You can say whatever you want.
But let me know how that works with your kids. Let me know how that works for them.
I'm thinking about coaching. I'm thinking about, my wife, my friends. Yeah. That won't go well.
That may backfire. I'm thinking this is a personal growth opportunity, not telling other people how to do it. But yeah. If only. Yeah, I think if I were to hand my cell phone with the timer to my children and be like, okay, you've got 5 minutes to be frustrated with me, and then we're all going to pick up the house, and they'd be like, whatever. No amount of time is going to make me less frustrated. But yeah, right. It's effective for you personally, I think.
Yeah, so that was the primary spiritual connection was pretty similar to what you were saying, right? Of like, every time I sin, I have the choice to sulk about it for hours, or I can just be like, right. Oh, I know what I did wrong. I can do better next time. I'm going to go to confession. And I'm gonna try again because I know that it's happened. I'm gonna be tempted. I've been saying the same freaking sins every time I go to confession for the last 20 years. I'm gonna get more opportunities at the plate when it comes to battling temptation, right? So,
yeah.
The other thing was, I was thinking about people who haven't done something in faith for a while. If it's been a while since you've prayed consistently daily. If it's been a while since you've been to Mass. If it's been a while since you've read the Bible. That one might be close to home. If it's been a while since you've been doing something that you used to do. Right. Yeah, exactly.
You looked right at me. Feel judged.
Oh, no. That was for me. That was not for you. I'll set a timer for you. You have 30 minutes to open your Bible. If you don't. So I was thinking about, like, if it's been a while since you've been to confession, if it's been a while since you've done any of these things, and you go the first time and it doesn't go well, it doesn't mean stop doing it. I was so mad the first time I got out and I didn't think I was going to have another opportunity. But like you said, it's this thing I haven't done in a while. I hadn't swung a bat in a game since the fall when I got hurt. Like it had been a while since I did this thing that, yes, I think I should be better at, but it is what it is. Life is life. Life happens. So if it's been a while since you read the Bible and you get nothing out of it, well, maybe it's just because it's been a while. Try again. If you go to pray and it doesn't go well, you get distracted, and then you get frustrated because you didn't hear anything. Maybe it's just because it's just been a while and you need to try again. So that's what I was thinking about after the first 4 hours of me being angry. Then I started thinking like, okay, here are some positive things. I guess I can grow as a person.
That's one option. As I tell my kids, that's one option. You could do that. Yep. Or, as my husband, I think it was one of the kids was mad the other day. They were doing something and it wasn't working. And they're like, I've tried and it just won't work. And we were like, how many times have you tried it? Well, just once. And we were like, and Scott yells from the bottom of the stairs, only practice what you're good at. And so, the kids, we have to remind them, but it's my reminder too. I think that we expect ourselves to be better the first time we try something. If maybe we've studied something or we feel like we have all the tools and we're like, yeah, this is going to work. It's going to be amazing. And then it doesn't. And then we look on the internet and it feels like someone else maybe has only tried it once and look how great it worked out for them. But then we forget, like, you don't see all the stuff behind the scenes. And I think that's actually where the growth happens, not in the outcome, but like, what did you do behind the scenes? Like, I think about things that I'm not that great at. And, what did I, like, what was my disposition? Did I do it because I really loved it, or was I trying to do it because I was trying to get accolades? Like, what was the motivation there? And the growth always happened. Like, we never see the growth. Like, you don't see flowers grow or grass grow. You only see it when it's bloomed or it's too long, but you don't see the process in between when it gets planted and when it grows. I mean, it happens so slow, but that's where all the hard work happens. I think we have to remind ourselves of that. It's hard, Taylor. I mean, I'll say that the process in becoming good at something is the hardest part. It's not the accolades that you get once you're good at it. It's the getting there.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're not patient. Yeah.
You just reminded me I need to go mow my grass. Thanks.
Sorry. Your house is on the market. You got to do stuff like that.
It sure is. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to go mow my grass, but I'm going to set a 1 minute timer for our audience. And they can say whatever they want about me and you during the break. And then we'll come back and they have to stop. If I hear any complaints after the minute, I'm going to be very upset. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. As the spring season wraps up, I am currently booking events for the next year, summer, fall, next spring. If you are at a parish Catholic school or you know somebody who is, which I would hope encompasses everybody listening to this show, I'd love to come speak, lead worship for your church, your parish, your diocesan event. I've been speaking for over a decade now, lead worship for over a decade, and I can help with your retreat, your conference, your parish youth night, whatever you have going on. All of the information about that is on fortecatholic.com/booking. Look forward to hearing from you. Thanks. Welcome back to Forte Catholic. I am Taylor Strohl, and that is Catherine Whitaker. One of the topics that you are bringing to the floor, I'm actually surprised about. You have a Germany pilgrimage, and when I think Germany, Catholicism isn't the first thing that pops into my head. I don't think it's what they're known for. I don't think it's really... When I think Germany, I have a lot of other things on the list before I get to Catholicism. So I'm actually really intrigued to find out how you're going to find some Catholicism in a country known for other activities.
You know what? I'm actually really glad that you said that. Okay, so we're going to Germany and Austria. This is in December, so the 7th through the 16th. The priest that's going with me is Polish. So his family... So if there was there was a family in Poland who was beatified, like the whole family. They housed Jews during World War II, and when they found out, they killed everyone in the family, including her unborn baby. So all of them were killed, and those were his cousins. So he was in Poland in September, last September, to be a part of the beatification and could celebrate the Mass, which was really awesome. So he's an amazing, faithful human being. He's a ton of fun. He quotes like Taylor Swift in his homilies, and we met in a really providential way. And so he's the priest that's accompanying us. But the reason that I chose Germany and Austria is, I mean, we were just coming off a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, right? So it's super easy. And Italy too, it's super easy to be like, oh, Catholicism, or oh, Jesus walked here, did this here. But I think sometimes we forget, Taylor, to look for Jesus in the places where we think he either doesn't exist or his presence is diminished. And so, I mean, obviously there's beautiful churches in Germany, like in Cologne and in Munich. And then we'll head over to Austria, like Sound of Music, Monsey Chapel, that sort of thing. But we're also going to be there during the Christmas season. And I think it was sort of inspired. We had, let's see, this would have been a year and a half ago. We took all of our kids, like loaded up the whole crew, saved a bazillion miles for way too many years so that we could take everybody to Italy during Christmas time. And the thing that I think was transformative for me was being in a country that the commercialization part wasn't really there. It was more like we saw all these families together, and it was, you know, nativity scenes were everywhere, and it felt just really genuine. And so when I was thinking about traveling to a country during a specific time of year, I was thinking, my family's German. So I grew up with a very German grandmother. And I thought, wouldn't it be beautiful to be in a country? Christmas market's sort of famous in Germany, but to be able to find Jesus in some of the small moments and find our Catholic faith. I mean, it's not as if Catholicism disappeared. Maybe the practice of Catholicism isn't what we'd like for it to be, but Catholicism and beautiful churches and all those things still exist. And so I think an ability to find Jesus and our faith there gives us a renewed appreciation for where we live and how it can surround us. But I think sometimes we feel like it has to be like in our face in order for us to be maybe to feel like, oh my gosh, I'm practicing my faith. But this ability, I mean, I think it was my husband and our parish priest went to Scotland and Ireland over spring break. And they were both saying like they came home with a renewed appreciation for how easy it is, like our access to faith here in the United States, and how easy it is to be a part of a parish community, depending upon where you live. But this access is much greater. Like it hasn't been diminished. Like over there, it's almost non-existent. But they said it was really renewing, I think, for them to be able to say, but even though it may not have been as apparent over there, we still found pockets of our faith over there. There's beautiful history. And they came back with a big stack of books of, you know, things that they wanted to read about. And so I think I have this desire to find out, you know, why isn't Catholicism as big over there as it used to be? But also I know that there are pockets over there and I want to come back. I mean, I think the whole point of pilgrimage is to come back and be renewed, but also be grateful for the resources that you have available, but also be like, surely God wants me to do something with these gifts that he's bestowed upon me and people that I love, and how can we promote a Christ-centered life? And so that's why we chose it. So it's a little bit a little bit fun because it's the time of the year that it is and what's over there, but also a true pilgrimage in the sense that we are really going to seek out and hopefully be a witness to the people over there that you can find Christ anywhere.
Yeah, you had me at Sinterklaas when I imagined you hanging out with German Santa in the German Christmas market. I was like, okay, you win, you did it.
I dug you a hole, and you got out
of it. You got out of it very quickly. I was like, you done good. It's like you were prepared for this unprepared question. I've also heard things about Austria. That's the other place you're going?
It is. So, Salzburg and Vienna.
So, like the steak and the sausage?
I mean, I guess they're going to have those there. I was more thinking about like Sound of Music. It's Mozart is, you know, we're going to go to the birthplace of Mozart. So a little bit fine artsy in the sense that like if you love movies and you love history and music, it'll be a really great place to go to. But yeah, I'll let you know about the steak. I mean, I'm sure it's there.
Thanks.
I don't know.
Report back. I want to
report back. Yes, I'll report back.
What you ate on every day. So I know that a few Catholic universities have like a, what do they call it? Like distance learning
study abroad
or whatever. In Austria, and I never understood it for similar reasons to the Germany thing, except Germany, I think, had bad connotation when it came to, I don't know, most of the world. Austria, I had no positive or negative. I'm just like, why are all these Catholics going to Austria? So I still have the question because I was like, why are you going to Austria? And you're like, the Sound of Music and Mozart. So what's going on with the Catholics over there?
And so St. Elizabeth of Hungary is also, so there's some saints connected to. So
wouldn't that be in Hungary?
Taylor, there are saints.
I'm serious.
Saint John. So Saint John the Baptist, Saint Anne, and Saint Elizabeth of Hungary are connected to several of those churches, both in Germany and in Austria. You know how the Catholic Church likes to take bits and pieces of our saints. You're right. Spread the wealth, as it were. But so I think it's just this continuation, sort of the part of Germany that we're going to be in, if you know a little bit of geography, is the southern part of Germany. And so that we're in the southern part of Germany. So we're not going to be like near Berlin or maybe some of the other places that people may be familiar with Germany. And then in the southern part and then also into the very northern part of Austria. So I think those two countries have a lot of shared history. And I think I was really interested. I mean, to be honest, the Sound of Music was the first time that I ever saw a nun, Taylor. So I was like, I didn't know, like, I thought they were only in movies because I had seen The Sound of Music and I knew that there was a nun in that movie and I thought they only existed in movies. And then I saw them in real life and my mind was blown. So this will be a little bit of a full circle moment for me to be like, oh, they actually do exist outside of the movie, The Sound of Music. So yeah, I think that shared history between those two countries, along with the interjection of the saints, I think is going to be a really beautiful. And then Austria has Christmas markets as well. Slightly different than Germany, but they're also pretty well known over there. So,
how you were with Sound of Music is how I was with Sister Act. I was like,
that was my second movie that I saw.
Seem
with
fun.
I've can't never sing seen that Sound song of Music, in mass. Sorry. You haven't. Wait, I'm sorry. You have never seen The Sound of Music.
Nah, so it seems boring.
How are we friends? You can't not see The Sound of Music. The Hills Are Alive, Taylor.
I don't know. You don't know what an RBI is, and we're still friends.
Oh my gosh! But I've watched baseball before.
Yeah, you know what's really funny is I actually I know the Hills Are Alive, The Sound of Music, just because of I was in a music department. It's one of those movies that I just didn't see naturally, and then when I realized that it made people mad, I just kept not watching it because of conversations like this. But actually, last softball game. So going back to last segment. My wife was prancing out into right field the previous inning when we were running out to the field. I was running to first base. She was running to right field. And she wasn't running as fast as I wanted her to. So I was like, put some pep in your step. So the next inning, she literally pranced out. So I'm just singing from first base, the hills are alive with the Sound of Music.
Yeah, I won't sing along with you, but I was mouthing the words. It's such a great movie. You have to watch it.
I don't have to. It's really old.
But I'm. Well, yeah, I watch It's a Wonderful Life, and that's even older than The Sound of Music. But
it's old.
Oh my Lord, Taylor, come on! Those are classics.
Boring.
Miracle on 34th. Have you seen that? Yeah.
I read okay, we're gonna have
to.
The Bible.
We're gonna have to end the podcast. I can't believe that you haven't seen. Okay.
No, there's not a timer. You can't be mad at me right now.
I never should have told you that. I am making you a list of movies. Okay, here's the deal. I'll make you a list of movies that you need to watch, and then you can give me a list of sporting events that I should watch. I'm okay, probably what's our already watched
for
them.
This because we both agreed at the beginning we don't have enough time for our actual normal lives. When are we fitting this in?
Let's I'm just give ourselves to the end till the
Christmas
end of 24
movies in June.
Hey, I'm gonna give you until the end of the year. You've got okay. 6 or 7 months.
Okay, right? I probably yeah. won't do it, but thank you for the leniency. I appreciate that.
Man, those are just pick one. I mean, how about I give you a list and you can just choose one?
You know, this actually really works for me. I might have shared this story on the show before, but the thing that got me back because of like my the same aversion to do what people tell me to has been a theme for most of my life. So when you're like, you have to do this, I'm like, I really don't. And I actually like that I say no. It actually brings me quite a bit of joy. But I had the same thing with required reading in high school. They were like, hey, you have to read this over the summer. I'm like, no, I don't. And then I would take a test on it. I got a 12 on that test. There was 100 questions. I got 12. If I just would have marked A on all of them, I would have gotten double the score that I did. But I actually tried, and I got a 12 out of
100. Have I ever told you the story? I don't think I have told you this story. I'm such a rebel. Okay, slot departure. One summer, I had reached the end of my rope. Like, I had nothing left in the tank. And they would always give my kids summer reading assignments. But instead of it being encouraging, like, hey, you can read all these books, they made them do these ridiculous projects, like build a diorama, make a video. And I'm like, you're basically sucking the joy out of reading. Like, just like my kids read, like, give them a pizza at the end of the year, but just let them read. And so I told my kids, I'm like, read, but you don't have to do the project. So I basically told my kids, read, but forget about the project. So when they go to school the first day, I said, just tell your teachers that you didn't do it. One of the teachers marches out to my car first day of school, and she feels like she has, like, that my child is definitely lying to her. And she walks over and she goes, I just wanted you to know that they were supposed to turn in their summer reading assignments today. And your child told me that you told them it was not necessary. Mm-hmm. And I said, you are correct.
Yeah.
And the look on her, she was like, you did what? And I said, you're sucking the joy out of reading. And so I gave
him
a pass.
Summer!
I
said, you don't owe me!
I said, just, it's like a completion grade. So I'm telling you that they read it because we talked about it at the dinner table. They don't need to do a silly project. So maybe if you need to give them a 50, a 75, whatever, but we're done here. We're not doing the project. And my kids were like, it's the best. And I was like, no, I just don't want you to lose your love of reading, because I had seen two of my kids hate reading because of that. So yeah, I did that. Anyway, nope, sorry, back to your story. But
that was my
super
mom.
Frustrated.
My mom was totally on board with me not doing the summer reading because she said it's summer and it's literally built in. They're not your teacher. They can't require you to do this. They're not your teacher from May until August. They don't run your life.
I'm definitely an advocate of continuing to learn, but don't suck the joy out of the learning part.
It's a lot of the required stuff. Like, I hate doing required reading, required whatever, right? So it was actually, I went through this whole thing in high school of hating all the required reading because they just picked the oldest and most boring books, just like you're picking the oldest and most boring movies.
Dead Men. No. Hey, you cannot equate Miracle on 34th Street or It's a Wonderful Life to The Man in the Sea.
Dickens.
Okay? Yeah. That's the worst book ever. Okay.
So
he's just on a boat.
My senior year, my English professor, who's actually an author himself, he said, you have to read. This is an English class. You have to read. I'm like, yeah, yes, I understand. Right. But he gave us a list of, like, I don't know, 40 to 50 books that we could pick from. And we all got to pick based on what we wanted. So we had some agency in it, but we also got to pick a book that wasn't written by an Englishman who hated himself in the 1800s. And I got to read a book. Ironically enough, this connects to earlier. It was a book about, it was called My Losing Season by Pat Conroy. And it was a basketball book about a guy who was in the military, played basketball for the Citadel. And they went they won like 1, 2, or 3 games. I can't remember exactly. And they went like 3-30. In their season. And it was about how, it's a memoir of how he dealt with that throughout the year and like the lessons that it taught him throughout his life. And I got to read, and like, it made me love reading again. You know what I started doing outside? Like, I started reading things like Redwall and Harry Potter and all these other things that I had dropped because I hated reading, because I thought all I was forced to do was Dickens, and they gave me agency and they let me pick, and I got to pick something that I liked, and it was great.
And you remember what you read, Taylor? How many years has that been? A long time ago.
A thousand.
1,000 years ago. But I mean, isn't that what we want our kids, right? So, I mean, I think this goes back to many things that we talk about in our faith. Like, when you give kids options, let's learn about this, or let's do this. Like, it's just like my high school Sunday school teacher, when he was like, what churches do y'all want to go to? I was Protestant at the time.
You said all of them. We learned that last month.
Yeah. And we went to all of them, and I'm like, what a great, and I still remember that. And I have a great appreciation for all those places, because he gave us choices of how he knew what he wanted us to learn, but he gave us a choice in how to get there. And I think summer reading programs can be so beautiful, but don't attach the requirement part of, I think it's good to give kids choices, because when they fall in love with a specific subject or specific author, it gets them excited about this concept of reading, and then they want to read more. But if you make them read the crappy stuff, why are they going to keep reading?
I don't know. And you know what? I feel like I just got on a tangent there, but anyway. I don't know how we got here. How do you sign up for your pilgrimage, Catherine?
Oh yeah. Okay. So you can just go to my Instagram. It's on there. Or if you're on my newsletter, I need to put it up on my website. I'll tell you what, by the time we get this aired, I'll put it up on my website. It's just CatherineWhitaker.net.
Perfect. Great.
Yeah.
They should go and bring a book of they should. And the plane. We connected it.
Take your book, whichever one you want to bring, and we'll find Jesus anywhere we go. That's the whole point. He exists everywhere, so let's go find him.
Beautiful. We did it. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Fort the Catholic could use your help. We've been busy over on the back end, working on a bunch of audio editing projects, booking for events. We've been obviously creating the show and all the other things that we do. And money has been tight. We are a Catholic nonprofit. Most of our income is from generous donations from people just like you. If you would like to give a one-time donation or really help us out and join our monthly giving team, it's fortecatholic.com/donate is how you can set that up. You can join our team of about 35 to 40 people giving monthly, and then over 100 that give one-time gifts throughout the year. We could really use your help. The summer that we're heading into is typically our lighter season when it comes to events and editing, because a lot of people take breaks. So if you can help us kind of meet that the difference in that, we would really appreciate it. fortecatholic.com/donate. Thanks. Appreciate it. Welcome back to Fort the Catholic. I am Taylor Schroll, and this is the Catherine Whitaker Show with a co-host as a clown. That's me. So you do host another podcast. It's actually a couple of podcasts under one umbrella. It's all called Hand to Hold. And you mentioned something to me earlier that I actually don't believe. So what would you like to celebrate today?
Oh, we recorded our 100th episode last week, which is pretty crazy. That was the thing, yes?
Yes.
What was the other thing?
Well, you said my 100th episode with Hand to Hold was last week. There's no way you've done 100.
So remember, the podcast existed before I became a host. So yes. My mentor recorded podcast episodes before I did. And then when I took it over, we did like 35 or so episodes, 38 episodes last year. And then I've done, I don't know, 10 this year. So when you add up the ones that Kelly had done and the ones that I did this year, the podcast celebrated its 100th episode, and I got to be the one to record it. Yes.
Okay. So that's more what I thought, because I was like,
you were like, there's no way I've done 100 with you.
I edit them, and I'm like, I have not done that many. What? I was like, have you been cheating on me with another editor? What's going on?
What editor do you have? What's your other podcast? Yes. Yeah, so we recorded the podcast 100th episode, and yeah, so I've been at the helm about a year and a half and really love it. It was fun because the 100th episode was with my husband. He's always a fun guest. I never have to prepare too much because we always have something to say together. And this is the parent-facing one. So the name of this podcast is NICU Babies Parent Support. The other podcast that I do is called NICU Heroes. So it stands for Neonatal Intensive Care Unit. And that one's really focused on nurses. So like if they're looking for continuing education credit, those tend to be a little bit more I don't want to say they're heady. We just find a specific topic and we dig really deep because I have a specialist, like whether it's a spine surgeon, a pediatric cardiologist, or a neonatologist that specializes in PTSD. So we dive a little bit deeper. The parent-facing ones are like 30 minutes. I try to keep them to about 30. And I either talk to a parent or I talk to a specialist or a therapist, and we talk about all sorts of things. So this particular season has been life after a NICU admission. So maybe you just got discharged, or maybe you're like me and 14 years out. So we kind of hit on, I think, some of the biggest topics that parents deal with: medical, relationships with your partner, your spouse, your physical and mental health, along with, you know, are you taking care of all the things you need to with your own baby? And I think it's been a lot of fun to do this season. So, and I guess Scott and I talked about social media a little bit, but really kind of how do you find good boundaries and share your story? So I really love it. I love that you get to edit it though. Always think when you listen to this, I'm like, how many things, like, I wonder what Taylor thinks when he hears this. So right. It's always fun.
I've learned more about you than I probably ever planned.
Probably. Yeah.
But from like the outsider's perspective, because I like we haven't had any neonatal kids. Right. So this is not something that I always get sympathize and empathize. I don't think I can really do either all that well with something that I've not done. Right. But when we're working on these and listening to these, like there has been a few things that have really stuck out to me about this show and the community that this show comes out of, the handhold community, but also just like the NICU parenting and the NICU staff kind of community that forms is one is how welcoming and helpful that community seems to be. Like, there seems to be a very deep understanding that this is really difficult for the parents, and most parents, for most of them, this is the first time that they've been doing this, right? So there seems to be a very big, like, hey, we're here to help you because we know this is hard. And secondly, that's connected to that one, is that it is mostly people who have gone through this before, either as the parent or as like the surgeon or the doctor or the nurse or whatever. And they're like, hey, we want to help you because we went through this. Because like, I've never done this, but I started working on your show right around the time that two of my kids broke their arms and one of them had to have very intensive surgery. So that's like probably the closest connection that I have, is like, it wasn't NICU, but it was serious surgery for a kid, right? Rob. Our first experience was very much, no one seems to care. No one seems to be helping when we went to the emergency room. No one seems to care. No one seems to do any of this. And then when we went to Texas Children's, they were essentially, I felt like a taste of the community that y'all seem to have around the NICU stuff of like, hey, we know this is hard for you. We know that we're doing everything we can. We're going to explain everything to you. We're going to be calm. Like, we're going to display confidence. Like, we've done this before. Everything's going to be fine. And they just took such great care of my kids. So I would say those are the two biggest pickups that I've had is, one, it's a welcoming community that understands like, hey, you didn't want to be a part of this community. You didn't want to be here. Right. But also it's like, it is people like you who dealt with this 14 years ago, but also you just dealt with it 2 weeks ago, whenever your kid had surgery again for similar reasons. So it's been really cool to kind of be, I just get this interesting peek into this community.
That makes me happy to hear. I love that I've been away from it long enough to have some perspective. So it's still tender. I think it will always be tender. But I think now I can speak to some guests and have some perspective that I didn't have 14 years ago, and hopefully helpful. Like, this isn't like a podcast full of reliving other people's trauma. So if someone's like listening to this and they're like, I want to listen to this podcast, I can't guarantee that maybe something that someone says may not be hard for you to hear, but I try to be really mindful that I'm not trying to even ask people to relive their hardest day in great detail, but like maybe share some of the highlights. And then what did you take from that? How have you grown? What do you wish you would have known? And I think that's sort of been our whole, I think, mindset as we publish the podcast. So it's overarching the group that publishes the nonprofit here in Austin called Hand to Hold. So the mom that started it had two micro preemies. So those are babies born before 30 weeks. Typically like Jackson, I think, was a 24 weeker. And so if you know, pregnancy is a 40 week gestation, 24 weeks is pretty early, 16 weeks early. So I think there's this understanding that we get it. And whether your NICU stays like one day or whether it was 250 days, like we don't look at people and we're like, oh yeah, you just spent one day in the NICU. Like, you're not a part of the club. In other words, like, if you're like, nope, if you spent any time in the NICU, you're worthy to be here and we want to help you, because it doesn't matter how many days you were there, it's still hard. No matter what you were there for, how traumatic it was, who else, you know, maybe this is your second or your third baby in the NICU. But yeah, over the weekend, we had a big NICU reunion. We had like 1,000 kids and their families come. And I was just really struck by this. I think as we were talking about mentorship, Taylor, this ability to see someone and be like, man, I know what it feels like, but then sort of to be a beacon of hope. And that's what Hand to Hold was for us. They paired us with a NICU mentor, and we continue to do that today. And I love how that idea of mentorship keeps showing up in my life, both in faithful circles, but also in secular circles. I'm a part of my sorority group. I just went to Memphis and we did this big mentorship program. And then in June, I'm going to Given, which is part of the Given Institute, which is Catholic in nature, pairing women who are older, over the age of 35, with women who are younger. I'll say more experienced, because older over 35 is not.
Y'all are so old.
No, we're not. Well, according to my kids.
I'm not there yet. I'm still only 34 for a little while.
You're just a baby. But this mentorship thing it leads me to believe that there's something to it. I mean, if Jesus chose 12 disciples and they mentored one another, I mean, I can't help but think that he wants that to continue. And it's just been really fun to see it not just show up in faithful circles, but to see it show up in secular circles, which means that there's something to this interconnectedness that we have, that like, we're not meant to live our life alone, you know, a singular life. Our churches were built for community. Our faith life is built for community. And so it's been really gratifying to see all those kind of come together just in very different circles of my life.
It has been cool. It has been cool. And I've also been jealous of, and actually been like, you've made me rethink my life a couple of times, which is existentially terrifying. It has been really cool, because most of my connection with you has been the show and at other Catholic events like that. All of our interactions have mostly been around Catholic stuff, but seeing you do this where it is secular and faith might come in every now and then, because like, even in secular circles, whenever there's tragedy or sadness or horror or stress, it's okay to bring in faith. It's okay to bring in prayer. So like, you have talked about it a little bit on the show, but it's mostly secular stuff. And it's been really cool to see, like, I don't know. There's, you're the same person, but there's something cool for me to see you bringing your same like joy and light that you do into a Catholic space, into a secular space that's darker by nature, just like on a faith level. And I've been like, am I wasting my life? Am I not going light to enough places?
No, it was just, but you know, Taylor, it wasn't a door that I ever planned on opening, right? Like, I would never have gone into that space had Luke not spent time in the NICU. And I think it was because our faith foundation was one where we had a lot of mentors, either like when we were volunteer youth ministers, we had this group of community. So it felt natural, I guess, to do that when we went to the NICU. And then we found that that's what everybody else did. It wasn't just people who had deep faith, but that we had this desire to connect with each other. And it is fun on the show. I mean, I don't shy away from talking about faith. I mean, it's kind of hard when you talk about babies for that not to come up. So sure. I don't tell my guests, you know, don't talk about Jesus, but it's not our primary focus. But occasionally he shows up and it's really beautiful to kind of introduce.
How'd he get in here?
He just sneaks in the door a little bit. And I never shut the door. I always leave it open. But at the same time, I think the undertones are there. And I would say, even though we don't explicitly say it, several of my guests have been Catholic. And so it's nice that we have that connection. But like you said, I get to talk to them maybe about something that they do in their professional life. So it's not that we step away from their Catholic faith, but I get to see the outgrowth of that, the beauty of that, of their faith, and how it informs them in a professional space. And I love it so much. I did not think, honestly, I mean, I thought I would enjoy the podcasting part, but I didn't think I would enjoy it this much. And I am really, really loving it. So
I have shared it with a couple of people in my life who like, people who are my age that are having kids. And I've had a couple of people that have had to go to the NICU, and I sent them the show and they were like, thanks. This is really
that makes me happy.
Nice. I needed it. So good job. You didn't do 100, but someone did.
And I've got a really great editor who makes me look really good. So thank you for that. And all the people that you work with.
For sure. So last little piece, you mentioned the mentorship aspect of it and how, you know, Jesus set it up this way. I didn't realize that your mentor was the person who did the first part of the podcast. Yeah. That's kind of funny. I was thinking about this, ironically enough, this weekend with a mutual friend of ours. Actually, the reason you're a co-host on this show is because we were at his wedding together.
So, oh, that's right. Yeah.
So that's kind of where we either reconnected or like really connected for the first time.
Oh my God. I still remember that. My cheeks still hurt from how much we laughed that night. Oh my gosh. It was so
I almost
fun.
Passed out because I couldn't breathe. We were laughing so hard.
Yeah. And all of the spouses around us were like, what is so funny? And Taylor and I, we're having a minute. Just leave us alone.
We're going to do a podcast, guys.
It was so fun.
I actually spent some time with him, with James this weekend, because I was the speaker for our diocesan junior high rally for the Diocese of Austin. So there's, you know, 300 junior high kids from across the diocese there. I was the keynote speaker. He was the musician and did a couple of breakout sessions as well. And what's funny is he and I have done multiple events together, and we are from the same parish, not in this diocese. Like, we're from a parish, grew up together in the same parish. Our like families ran in the same circles. He's a right under 10 years. He's right around 10 years older than me. So like, we didn't like grow up hand in hand, but like, we both knew of each other from like high school when he was in college, that sort of thing. Or he was like a helper for youth ministry when I was in junior high and high school, that sort of thing. So it was really funny for me. It's always funny, but I really had the experience again this past Saturday of when I go and I see him do ministry, when I see him like speak, when I see him lead music, when I hear him lead music, I see either myself or the same influences. Like, we did this one song and I'm like, that's exactly to the T how I do that song, how I talk about it, when I tell them to do the hand. Like, it's exactly the same because we learned it from the same human being who was a mentor to both of us, right? Who ironically is actually around the same age as James, but he was, I guess, further along in ministry. So like, we both learned from the same guy. We both had the same influence, like the same people that taught my RE classes probably taught his a few years before. So like, it's really funny to see, one, that we ended up in very similar work. It's been cool to see it, but it's also like, for me, it was a humbling moment of like, I like to think that I'm like good at the things that I do. And this Saturday was just a reminder that like, I'm just a conglomeration of all the people that have poured into me my entire life, you know? Because like, I couldn't look at him do ministry and then see me do it 5 minutes later when he finished a song and be like, I'm different and special because I'm just a different version of him, right? So it was a really cool and kind of humbling moment to like recall all the people that poured into me when I was a kid, when I was in high school, but also just like my ministry, like mentors. It's like, we're all just a product of all of that experience that's just been shared with us, which I thought was neat.
It is cool when you think of it like that. Like, if I am the sum total of all the people who've poured into me, and then I get the chance to pour that into someone else, I mean, it absolutely sort of identifies and allows people to see the interconnectedness. But I love that we're not so singular. You know, people say like, oh, you're unique. You know, you're your own person. Yes to all of that. But I am the person I am today because of people who took the time to pour into me. And whether we have the same mannerisms or the same responses. And then we have, you know, inherently who God created us to be, which means I think that we were built for magnificent things because all those people pour into us. So I think, I hope it's an encouragement to people out there to say, like, if you think, oh, I don't know if I have anything to offer the world, or I don't know if I've lived through enough. I mean, you have by nature, just because of what people have poured into you, but that means that you're called to do that for someone else. I was just speaking to a group, was it last week? And I looked at this group of women and I said, when is the last time that you looked down the pew at church and like looked at the 20-year-old and said, you should come to dinner, like, please come to our house? When was the last time that you looked at the young family who's got 4 screaming kids and said, you know, you have a beautiful family? When was the last time that you looked at someone who had gray hair and said, I'm pretty sure that you've lived through some hard things and I'm struggling with something. Can I get your advice? Like, we are not meant to just sit, not just in our pews, but sit in our own lives and not surround ourselves with people that can be good mentors for us, whether they're younger than us, the same age as us, or older than us. And I'll beat that drum for a while. I feel like that's this new season of my life, is that I feel like I, because I see the value of it, I just love when people tell me I need a mentor or I want to be a part of a mentoring relationship, because I'm like, it can only make you better. So that's my 2 cents, maybe my 25 cents.
Yeah. That's like, it's kind of a joke, but it's also kind of serious that like everybody on this show's older than me. And I think that's part of it, is because like, I like one, I just like y'all as people. That's the primary reason. But like, I think there is something to like, when I come on here, I'm sharing the joys and the sufferings of my life. And I would like to do that with somebody that I think could be helpful in those moments. Right. So I think there really is something to that, because everybody that's like, if you want to talk about percentages of who I am, you increasingly over the last 2 years, and Allison and Anthony have been there for the whole time. It's like, I am a large percentage of those three people, you know? So I guess that's my last thought, is thanks.
You're welcome. I mean, I think that, I mean, I haven't met Anthony in person, but I dearly love Allison's influence in my life. Someday. But I love Allison's influence in my life, and I'm grateful. I always think back, you know, to moments maybe that were difficult, and I'm like, who did God put in my life that day? I remember there was one particular day I came over to College Station, and I was in a rough season, and it was you and Allison sitting at the table. And I remember looking back thinking, okay, Jesus, you knew exactly what you were doing that day. But I didn't see it then, but I see it now, and felt very loved. So I hope you feel loved, Taylor.
I don't remember that day, which probably means I probably didn't realize it was as big of a deal for you. I probably made some joke that I shouldn't have. So sorry.
No, you were exactly who you needed to be in that moment and in that day. And it was good for me that day. You just didn't know it.
Good. Fantastic. That's beautiful. Look at us. You know, I got to share that I've been being nice to you behind your back. I've been sharing your podcast. And also I texted you when it was yesterday, 2 days ago, that it finally happened. I think it was very, very fun for me. My aunt, who's been influential at her Paris for you know, years now, she had texted me a few weeks ago for some recommendations for a women's conference. And I was like, clearly me. And then she said, LOL, no. And she said, well, who do you recommend? And you were one of the two people that I recommended. And they chose you. And now you're speaking at a women's conference for my aunt's parish because I told her to.
I'm so excited. No, you're like, oh my gosh, I know exactly who that is. It made me so happy to hear that. I was so honored. Yeah,
that was great. So look at us. I might have been mean to you in person in the past, but I'm always nice to you behind your back. That's how most of my friendships are. Mean in person, nice behind your back. I think that's something in the Bible probably contradicts that, but it's how I live my life. So let your yes mean no and your no mean yes. All right. Well, that's our show. Catherine, we did it. And honestly, you did it. I brought one thing to the table, and look at us. Here we are an hour later with an entire podcast. You did great.
We did it. I'm glad.
All right. Fun. I'll be back next week, hopefully with some ideas. She'll be back in a month, and we'll see if she does the full show or a little bit less next time. See ya! 'Thank y'all for watching and listening today. I hope that you enjoyed today's show. If you do, please hit subscribe wherever you are listening. If you want to check out our YouTube channel, not only do we have full-length episodes of this show, but we have entire other playlists of our speaking, music, other pop culture videos, all sorts of stuff. YouTube.com/ForteCatholic. Hit subscribe, share it with a friend, and we'll see you next week. Love you.